You're listening to the I Love You Keep Going podcast with George Haas. For more information, please visit our website at www.metagroup.org. That's www.metagroup.org.
So welcome, everybody. This is I Love You Keep Going. It is January 4th, 2024 at 7:35 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And I had a request from somebody to talk about what happens if you're already coupled and one person begins to do the attachment work and the other person steadfastly refuses to do it. This is something that comes up actually quite a bit. Usually in those relationship dynamics, one person is satisfied in the relationship and the other person is not satisfied in the relationship. It's the person who's not satisfied who's looking for solutions to their dissatisfaction in the relationship. And the person who is satisfied goes along to a certain point because they want to continue to receive the care that they're receiving. At least in my experience of doing this, that's mainly what happens. One person is content, the other person is not content. Usually when the person who is content in the relationship comes into work, either individually or as part of the couple, mainly their activity is to placate the other person. And so they don't really undertake much in the way of deep work. aren't necessarily wrong in their conviction that the way that we've negotiated this relationship really works, and I don't see the need to change it. And when you go into a relationship with somebody, of course, you begin to negotiate agreements that allow the relationship to function. And if you have negotiated in good faith and arrived at a relationship that really works for you, that is a legitimate point of view. If the other person has not been so effective in negotiating the terms of the relationship, where they misrepresented what they wanted, or they find themselves in a position where they no longer want what they previously negotiated, then renegotiation is what needs to happen, provided both people in the relationship are willing to do it. One of the things about undertaking the attachment work is that if you have insecure, disorganized attachment and you earn security, the fundamental agreements that you have in all of your relationships are no longer really going to work. And all of them are going to need to be renegotiated in some way. If you have secure relationships relationships with secure people or relationships that are operating in a basically secure frame, then most of the time those renegotiations can take place in a way that preserves the relationship, although the terms of the relationships change. Sometimes level of care, the closeness changes. In collaborative relationship systems, those are basically the terms, and both parties are used to the level of care that secure functioning relationships require, which is more care than insecure, disorganized relationships usually get. So one of the main difficulties in the transition from insecure to secure relationships is the amount of time, energy, and resources that the secure relationships require from people who aren't used to putting that much energy into relationships. It's not that they don't put a lot of energy, it's just not the level of energy that secure functioning relationships require. The other main difference between secure and insecure is that secure relationships tend to be collaborative and insecure relationships tend to be transactional. So they're less intimate and more about more of a tit, I like to say tit for tat system. You do this for me, I do that for you. If you don't do that for me, then I don't do this for you. So it operates more in that way. A collaborative relationship, really, you take on the responsibility for the care and you care for them, whether or not they can reciprocate in each transaction or each encounter. One of the things that secure collaborative relationships take into account that people's capacities vary. I mean, you could get a bad cold and not be able to get out of bed for a few days. And in a transactional relationship, that would cause a lot of friction if you weren't able to keep up your end of the bargain. In a collaborative relationship, which is more adaptive, that you would receive the care because the other person is still obligated to you to provide that. In organized, attached people, typically you see collaborative relationships on the secure end and transactional relationships in the dismissing and disorganized side of things. In disorganized relationships, what you often see is colloquially what we call trauma bonding. In trauma bonding relationships, what happens is that the experience of the other person drifts in and out from the recognition of the perpetrator of the trauma. And so sometimes you see the individual clearly as themselves, and sometimes they become the perpetrator. And then you find yourself reacting to them as if they were the perpetrator and not somebody different than that. Dan Brown used to say, for every bite, there's a set of teeth that matches. And so that's what we tend to recognize. Our wound matches the other person's in a way. And then you slip in and out of those roles. They perceive you either as yourself or as the perpetrator. You perceive them either as themselves or as the perpetrator. It isn't unreasonable for somebody who's content in a relationship, who's negotiated in good faith, to question the need for renegotiating. But they generally will then renegotiate in a way that makes the relationship work going forward so that they can preserve the relationship. One of the things that happens in transactional relationships is there's a willingness on one party's part to accept a non-reciprocal deal where one person is winning and one person is losing. Secure relationships, you tend to have a concern that both people feel that they're winning in terms of how the negotiations turn out. And in transactional relationships, there's a kind of competition where one person wins, even if the other person is losing. In that kind of relationship system, it is no longer a valid stance that you shouldn't have to renegotiate because you got the better deal. Collaborative relationships don't work on one person winning and one person losing. Both people have to have a sense of winning. But when you have a transactional relationship where one person is clearly winning and the other person is clearly losing, renegotiating with the loser is often not something that the other person is willing to do. So you'll notice in the shifts where the person who's a disadvantage in the relationship begins to do the work of changing their understanding of how secure relationships are supposed to function. And then begin to apply those tenets to the transactional relationship. Sometimes the winning partner is unwilling to change the terms of the relationships, and the relationships don't hold together. What you'll notice in the pattern of dismissing people with preoccupied people is that if the dismissing person reciprocate so little care that they allow the preoccupied person to burn out, what's more likely to happen is that the dismissing person will change preoccupied partners so that they can continue to receive the care that they want without having to reciprocate. In some ways, the way that they, the view of themselves that they hold as somebody who doesn't have to reciprocate. The preoccupied person trading proximity or reciprocal care. You see quite a bit the recognition of this happening to the partner who is not cared for enough in the relationship, and there's an effort on their part often to bring the other person into this kind of teaching process so that they can also then begin to develop secure functioning skills. And if you can see as that dismissing person that this is actually a better way to go and more that you get a better outcome from it, then they tend to engage in the process of changing. Dismissing people, the repairs are easier than in preoccupied people. So that can also create a level of complication. The dismissing person is able to repair the difficulties and to learn the skills faster than the preoccupied person is able to. And so they tend to speed ahead, and the preoccupied person has a hard time keeping up with the changes. In couples work, we tend to think of the dismissing people as compliant and the preoccupied people as resistant. One of the formulations of the preoccupied mind is to look for problems and then to present the problems. And the more unsolvable the problem, the better, because it requires more attention, more proximity. And so the sincerity of the practice is, of the preoccupied person is sometimes lacking. Preoccupied people also tend to operate in pretend mode, and so they can pretend to do the work and not really do the work, and so they don't change much. Whereas the dismissing person who is compliant and does the work as directed tends to see the benefit faster. They also have less to do. When you look at the skill set of what a dismissing person has, the main way that they operate is by suppressing the attachment system and suppressing awareness of emotion. But their exploration system is really developed. So what they need to do is reactivate the attachment system so they have consciousness around that, and then also to allow the conscious expression of emotion, and then to learn how to regulate the emotion, and then to shift what is often a very tightly focused secondary exploration into primary exploration. So secondary exploration is the pursuit of time, energy, and resources that you can use to transact the care that you want. And primary exploration is where the activity of the exploration is the source of meaningfulness in your life. So allowing the attachment system to activate, learning your emotions and how to regulate them, and redirecting your secondary exploration into primary exploration is a much shorter course than beginning to develop the capacity to monitor your spontaneous reactivity, to develop the capacity to think and to mentalize your experience, to come out of pretend mode and begin to express yourself authentically, to regulate the emotional experience of presenting yourself authentically, and then learning to the fundamentals of exploration and beginning the process of enough secondary exploration that you have the resources then to pursue primary exploration. That is a much longer course, and there's a lot more that needs to happen for the preoccupied person in order to come into a place of security. Disorganized people, the main difficulty of disorganized attachment is the aspect of dissociation. If you're disorganized and you're dissociative and you use dissociation as the primary means for emotional regulation, then you have to train yourself to regulate in ways that are not dissociative so that you can come out of the limiting effects of dissociation. At the near end of the dissociative spectrum, it's a fuzzing in and out of the intensity of the experience of the present moment. At the far end, you come out of conscious awareness of what's happening. And the process of splitting that happens in dissociative people can be at a level of complexity that there's going to be a lot of time, energy, and resources necessary in just resolving that so that you can have a continuous flow of experience that is at an ordinary intensity. Then the thing that needs to happen is the confidence in your perception of what's happening needs to develop so that you're no longer frightened, so frightened that you discount the perception that you have of what's happening. Most people who develop a disorganized attachment do so because the circumstances of their early life are so extreme and often the source of care that they are meant to rely on is also the source of the danger, the threat that they experience. And so they learn to dissociate from that experience, but they also are often exploited through the seduction of their natural dependency and natural need for protection. And so they question their own capacity to determine who will hurt them and who won't hurt them, who is telling the truth and who isn't telling the truth. And because they don't rely on their perception of what's happening, they become very protective and hidden in a way. And so that confidence that you can rely on your perception of things and rely on the meaning that you assign to things is the thing that comes after the dissociative piece is repaired. And that opens up the capacity then to begin to express yourself in an authentic way. The other piece for disorganized people is the reliability piece. The foundation of secure functioning relationships is easy reliability. And what that means is that you do what you say you're going to do, and you don't do what you say you're not going to do, and you do it so reliably that when you say something, the other person understands that's actually what's going to happen. And so they don't worry about it. And then they tell you they're going to do or what they're not going to do, and they do it so reliably that when they say that, you don't worry about whether or not they're going to do it. You know that that's going to happen, or there's going to be an occasional explanation that is compelling. In dismissing people, they have a childhood experience where they need to idealize the care and the caregivers and the care that they receive. And because it is very often not tied to what's actually happening, they break off the part of doing what you say and not doing what you say, and learn to idealize. That is, they learn to present the experience in a way that the other person wants it presented to them. Very often, that includes no negative expression of any kind. So you have, in dismissing people, this capacity to understand what it is that's supposed to be presented. They understand how to present it, and they present it so that they can have the care that they want. And once they receive the care for them, the transaction is complete. Is that making sense? One of the things where they get into so much difficulty with secure people is secure people actually expect you to do what you say you're going to do, where dismissing people say whatever it is that they think you want to hear so that you'll give them something. Once they have it, in their mind, the transaction is complete, closed, whereas a secure person is still waiting for you to deliver on what you said you were. And when you don't, the epistemic trust breaks, that ability to believe them breaks. In one of the main differences in the childhood experience of secure and insecure people is that insecure people have the childhood experience of their caregivers not being reliable in what they say they're going to do. And so the way that they preserve the quality of good parent is by splitting off that monitor. They don't monitor whether you say or that you don't do what you say you're not going to do, because it was an unbearable experience in childhood to do that. So the reason that dismissing and preoccupied people go together so well is that the preoccupied person is pretending to do whatever they're doing, but the underlying need is really the physical proximity. And they're totally happy to accept any idealization from the dismissing person as long as it involves the proximity that they need. So neither party is actually being authentic in the exchange. So one of the repairs here is to draw out of the closet that wagon that evaluates the what people say and what they do, and hitch it back up to the empathetic process. We talk about empathy as the visceral response to the witnessing of somebody else's physical or emotional pain, the ability to read facial expressions and body language and understand that that's representative of the other person's internal state, to connect in a compassionate, empathetic exchange where you feel in your body what they're feeling. We tend to use the second and third as a gauge of whether somebody's telling us the truth or they're lying to us, because if they match, the presentation and the felt sense of the person match, we tend to believe them. And if they don't, we tend to not believe them. But secure people also evaluate whether they do what they say. And that's one of the main shifts out of insecurity. So when you're coming into these this work and you begin to the process and you begin to recognize what your conditioning is and you begin to adjust it so that you can function in a more secure way, the reliability piece, that is to say that you do what you say and you don't do what you say you won't do, is one of those fundamental changes in a relationship that's transactional, that can be problematic. Because as you begin to monitor whether you're doing that, you also begin to monitor whether the other person is doing it. And if they're not doing it, you can get to a place of demanding that they do it. One of the things that is very typical in preoccupied people in this early transition part is the ultimatums about leaving. And so there's a piece in the beginning where you stop threatening the relationship if you don't get what you want. That isn't actually a fair way to negotiate an agreement with someone. You open the topic and you collaborate on a creative solution where both parties feel like they're winning. It's very easy for you to throw down the abandonment card and the other person capitulate in the moment, but down the line not be able to keep the agreement because it feels so unfair to them. They don't keep the agreement and then you have to renegotiate. Christian?
Sure. Maybe this is a kind of a wonky framing. Do you think that the approach for someone in a relationship with a preoccupied person to ask them to do this work should be different than the approach for someone in a relationship with an avoidant or dismissive person in order to sort of get them to hear it?
My experience of preoccupied people who come because their dismissing partner is coming is that they pretend to do it and they don't actually do it. This has happened over and over again, is the dismissing person repairs pretty quickly, and once they stop coming, almost immediately the preoccupied person stops coming. Because they actually were never there to do the work. They were only there because they were required to do it by the dismissing person. On the other hand, most of the people who come to do this work are preoccupied because it's so limiting in terms of the satisfaction and the meaningfulness in their lives. If they can recognize that, then they're highly motivated to do the work. And for those people, they do the work and it does shift and they do end up moving in to earn security. So part of it is really examining what is the motivation for the person coming in. Dismissing people typically do not come into doing the work unless they're compelled by an outside force. So that because there's such a high level of addiction in the dismissing community, often the difficulties are the result of the doses of the substances or the risk factors of the behaviors that they engage in are so great that there's an outside intervention to push them into it. Because everything is so unfair anyway, even if the dismissing person is compelled into the treatment because they're compliant and they're more likely to do the actual work than a resistant person is, and they can have the experience of benefit fast enough. Then they take it on themselves rather than the compelling piece to do it. But then also, dismissing people are quite fragile, and it's easy to have an abruption in the work that spins them out. You know, it isn't, even in transactional relationships, it isn't that there isn't a genuine regard or care for the other person. And so often what you find in relationships where at the core of it, there's this real valuing of the other person, even though there is the dismissing preoccupied dynamic, they're able to move through it. And even though the dismissing person moves through it faster, if they see the value of their partner, They're willing to hang in there. It's only when the partner who's getting the better deal doesn't want to renegotiate and have a collaborative experience that they tend to leave. And what can happen in that situation then is that the preoccupied partner typically capitulates and goes back into the relationship on the accepting the unfair terms. But most of those accommodations are fairly temporary. They burn out again and then they can't do it. So that dynamic remains.
So then, George, have you noticed any predictors of the preoccupied partner that comes into this work, sort of perhaps in that inauthentic way, versus the preoccupied partner that comes into this work again because their partner's in it and then actually takes it seriously and kind of does it for their own sake?
Oh, I'm thinking if I answer this, I'll be arming preoccupied people with the weapon that they need to convince the facilitator that they're actually doing the work when they're not actually doing the work. But maybe it's worth the risk to say that. One of the things about preoccupied people is that they operate from pretend mode most of the time. So they're actually pretending to engage in things, but not actually engaging in them. And so the clue that you're looking for in working with them is that they've engaged, that it appears fresh and it appears authentic, and it appears to be particularly of their experience rather than something more general or something that you would like them to do. That one of the easiest tells with preoccupied people is they parrot your language, and you have the experience of listening to yourself talking, which is very different than something fresh and idiosyncratic. The other thing that you need from a preoccupied person is an acknowledgement of what's actually happening for them. And because preoccupied people explore so poorly, what you're really listening for in the beginning is an acknowledgement that they can't do it. And that is a fresh, authentic expression of what's actually happening for them. And then you can scaffold them and begin to support them as they learn how to explore. That's the piece. And then once they do that, of course, they can begin to mentalize well enough. That's the process. So there is a mentalizing scale, 0, 1 to 9. And secure people tend to mentalize at a 6 to 9 range out of the box, dismissing at 4 to 5, preoccupied people at 3 to 4, and disorganized people at less than 3. And so there's a big distance of growth that has to happen in your capacity to monitor your own thoughts and monitor the meaning that you give to the experience as it's arising. That's one of the pieces. Preoccupied people are other focused, and so they have to bring their attention back to them. They confuse the empathetic experience of the other with their own emotional experience. So they need to develop clarity around that and to see their own emotional experience as primary and the empathetic experience as secondary. There's also the emotional regulation piece that happens for them. Dismissing people, of course, don't feel an embodied sense of emotion. And some dismissing people don't even have a cognitive sense of what they're feeling. And so when you open up the emotional experience to them, it feels very dysregulating. And so the first piece is opening it up, and the second piece is then learning how to regulate it in a conscious self experience. If both people value the relationship and both people want the relationship to work and both people are willing to do the work that they need to do individually and then renegotiate the terms of the relationship so that both people feel like they're winning and can sustain the agreements, then those relationships repair and become much stronger. And in relationships where one person feels like they're clearly winning at the expense of the other, and they don't want to change those terms, then the relationship doesn't hold really. But it's better for the person who's at a disadvantage in the relationship to leave anyway. That makes sense. One of the things that makes that hard is that insecure and disorganized people think that they won't have relationships and that they're likely to be alone most of their life. And so they often are willing to accept any relationship rather than the loneliness of living in isolation. And while that may have been the experience of the life with the attachment skill set that you have, as you learn a more secure way of being in the world, you open up the possibility for more satisfying relationships that were not possible before. So that if you do the work and you change the automatic responses to connecting to other people, then you open the possibility of a whole different kind of relational environment that you were wrong about was not available before, right? But if you don't, of course, if you don't, then you have the skill set that you have, and you're likely to have the kinds of relationships that you have. And then the choice is between an unfulfilling relationship or relationships that don't work very well or being alone. But what happens to a lot of people with adverse attachment outcomes is that toward their mid-30s, the disappointment of failing relationships become so great that they withdraw from attempting to form relationships. Their lives often work better outside of the dysfunction of the relationships that they're able to have. And so they go it alone. That I notice that happens quite a bit in the mid to late 30s, that people make the decision not to have dysfunctional relationships. They don't have an alternative, and so they're mostly alone. They're not avoiding the relationship so much as they're avoiding the disappointment and confusion that they can't get it to work. Fearfully preoccupied people often long for relationships but can't bear the disruption and disappointment. And fearful, avoidant, or complexly disorganized people often in entering into trauma-bonded relationships repeat the harm that they experience. And so they're also withdrawing from the harm that they experience relationships to be. And so being alone is better than being harmed. They're more willing to endure the isolation. How's that? So why don't we do some meditation? Loving kindness practice for self. We're always trying to build up that intentional positivity around the self experience. We'll begin with some easy people and then move into the self. All right, let go of the meditation. Oof. So what's going around? How was that meditation? Let me ask you that first. Comments or questions? We have a level two class, which is starting this month on Friday mornings. We're going to do meditation and addiction evening this month. And then I think that we'll do a meditation an addiction series on Saturdays in February. We have two retreats planned for the spring. One is in Poland, which will be from the 11th until the 25th of May. And then in Utrecht, the first week of June. I think that's about everything that's happening coming up. I offer the teaching freely. I hope that it's helpful to you. But I do hope that if you're resourced and are able to, that you'll make a donation, help support me and also the work that Metagroup is doing. There's a link on the website to make a donation. Christian?
George, where in Poland is the retreat?
Gdańsk. Is that how you say it?
Gdańsk.
Gdańsk.
Cool.
It's at the opposite end of the border that of Ukraine.
Yeah. We got it back from the Germans, though. That's all about it.
Say it again.
Gdańsk.
Gdańsk?
Gdańsk.
Gdańsk.
The only more difficult country you could have picked for pronunciation is probably Hungary.
There's a meditation center there. It holds 60 people. I think it'll be, I've never been to that part of the world, so I'm looking forward to going. Where have you been? What cities would you go to?
That area is great. It's right on the Baltic. And the great thing about Gdańsk is the Germans built it, so it's really nice and clean.
Oh.
But around
my grandmother was from Boyten, which was German and then Polish and then German and Polish. Have you been there?
Sorry, one more time?
Boyten?
Boyten.
Yeah.
It's not ringing a bell.
Okay. Same thing with the border town where it was owned by one and then the other and then the, you know, back and forth.
Gotcha.
Thank you. See you soon.
Or can you do something in Los Angeles, please?
Let me ask you a question. The Big Bear Retreat Center might be a possibility, but it's, I don't know, it's upwards towards 200 a night. Is that something that would be affordable?
Probably not right now.
That's the reason.
Just a day long or something.
Oh, that we could do. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Let me figure that out.
Okay.
All right. See you later. Okay. Bye, everybody.